Okay, members, we're going to go ahead and get started. It's 8:35, and as all of you know, I really like to start on time. I think so.
Critical.
You're going to die over this, aren't you? Don't sit down.
I was on time.
Okay, since we do not have a quorum yet, we're not going to... We will not approve the minutes, and we will not bring the bill up, but we're going to go ahead and start with testimony. So, Representative Morgan, you have the first bill on our agenda, and that is House File 2751. Would you like to speak to us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Until we get a quorum, I'll go ahead and begin our presentation here. House File 2751 is really a simple but important change in our laws regarding standardized testing, specifically the GRAD test. What we'll do is enable students who have failed the GRAD test to retake it using a pencil and paper format. I have with me the testing coordinator from Burnsville High School, my high school, Bruce Morissette, assistant principal, and also memos from the St. Paul School District to talk about why this is so important for students. So I will turn the conversation over to them to provide their expert testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead and proceed.
Hi, my name is Bruce Morissette. Thank you for allowing me to come. First off, I'd like to say that I appreciate the work that Dirk Mattson has done to help us with even getting to the paper pencil part of this. Dirk and I have worked on this for a period of time. One of the questions is waiting till a student fails three times. Not sure you are familiar how it goes, but pretty much it's 6 weeks in between test sessions. If we wait for a student to be able to take the paper pencil test after they failed three times, about the earliest time we could do that would be February. Most likely we're talking April. That's a long period of time. I wish you could sit in the room with me when these students walk in to take the computerized test, as they are pretty dejected. By waiting until April, they're pretty down. One thing I will say is, as I look around the table, most of you all have pieces of paper in front of you that you use to read, to write on, and to remember the data. Try taking a high school student who doesn't read very well, and now they have to scan through a computer up and down to answer questions and then go back and forth. Realize there's a cost issue. What I would like to say is after a student takes the computerized test once, if they fail that, we actually give some responsibility back to the individual school districts to allow the district to decide those students who might benefit from a paper pencil test earlier, based on the fact that a lot of these students do not read well and can scan up and down. All research shows that's not the best way to learn that. Districts have to pay $45 per student per test. We don't have a lot of money, as you're well aware of. We're not going to be running down the street all the time trying to get these students to come in and take it. It's three tests is too long. It puts us into April. April is testing month. That's also when the MCA2s come in. And when we're really trying to get students ready for that next test, it would be nice to be able to do the paper pencil test earlier in the system.
Thank you, Mr. Morissette. Mr. Moes? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Moes. I'm the Acting Chief Accountability Officer for the St. Paul Public Schools, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you on this bill. As St. Paul works to meet the academic challenges presented by the GRAD policy, the district also faces a number of challenges from the logistics of administering the tests to the number of students that we have to each month. While it's not been easy to meet these challenges every month, we've been able to so far, but it has come at a cost. It's come at the cost of access to the computer labs in every one of our high schools for almost up to 2 weeks a month. This has forced schools to scrape together lesser alternatives to provide access to technology to enhance learning or to forego this access entirely. In the 21st century, this is not a desirable choice, and it does raise important questions. It has also come at the cost of adding computer and network capacity to ensure that machines are operating properly. It has increased the requirements for tech support at our high schools so that we have people trained in the administration and oversight of the testing in every high school, which draws resources away from other things. In in our district, approximately 20% of our computers are 7 years or older. Our best case scenario foresees a $25 million deficit going into the foreseeable future, and each year. And it's difficult to see how our district is going to be able to invest the millions a year that we're going to need to be able to get onto a six-year replenishment cycle so that we can upgrade all the computers that we need to in our district. And that six-year refresh cycle is not even an ideal schedule. We've been able to meet these obligations to date, but it is getting increasingly challenging and will likely, as the numbers of students grow each year as they face the grad requirements. The paper pencil administration of the grad may also provide some benefits to some particular groups of students whom St. Paul serves more than any other district in the state. For our English language learners, the administration of the test via computer adds another variable to the mix: computer literacy beyond the subject mastery. Anecdotally, we have encountered some situations where some of our students are struggling with the computers more than the content. And adding this additional stress to an already stressful situation is certainly not something we want to be doing on a regular basis. We also, to sort of reflect the comments of my other colleague from Burnsville, we recognize that a number of the strategies that we use with English language learners relies on them interacting with physical text. And the process of interacting with physical text on paper is different than interacting with it on a screen. So we are concerned that that translation is not 100%. We recognize that this proposal likely carries with it some additional costs for the state to provide an ongoing paper pencil administration, but the computer administrations impose real costs on the districts as well. St. Paul is interested in having at least some limited access to paper pencil tests for students until it is irrefutable that computer-based testing is no different than paper pencil testing. Computer-based testing for the grad is our present and possibly the future for all statewide tests. It has a lot of potential benefits if the infrastructure is in place to support the system. As the state moves forward, we want to make sure that the computer testing requirements do not further limit the access to technological and educational resources. And we want to make sure that the computer testing is equivalent to paper pencil administrations, so every student has an equal chance to succeed on the state tests. Thank you.
Very good, Mr. Mose. Thank you. It is my impression that Mr. Mattson would like to testify in support of the bill. I know, I was just saying that. I'm the chair. I can say that.
Nope, it's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dirk Mattson. I'm the Director of Research and Assessment with the Department of Education. I originally was sitting with all my friends here when they got up. We would like to identify some concerns for the committee regarding this particular bill. Just a little bit of background. As has often been stated in this committee about research and making sure that we do the research, we are required by the standards for testing, by this book that I'm bound to follow, to do comparability studies. And we did comparability studies. In fact, we went over and beyond. Our technical advisory committee said, you've done too much. Don't do that additional piece. And we have gone on to do comparability studies to make sure that this test is comparable to the paper-based test. That said, and the other point is to Mr. Moe's commentary, there is no such thing as irrefutable evidence. So we have done the comparability study that demonstrates that. Our TAC has said there is an overwhelming amount of evidence that this and other similar tests are comparable, and so our TAC, our Technical Advisory Committee. And so we feel that the test is appropriate and a valid measure of students' scores, and we are not testing computer skills. That said, we recognize that comparability study is done in the aggregate, and that is always the case in a test, that the test is done in the aggregate, and there are some students that have may benefit from a paper-based test. And to that end, I've worked with Mr. Morissette in Burnsville. We've come up with a paper-based form that's available for students to take. Out of the very small number of students that have taken that, although the number is increasing, we have a very, very small percentage of students who have actually taken the paper test then and passed. In fact, the passing rate for those students is so close that it's within the confidence interval that I could not attribute it to being taken on paper. It just may happen that they took another instance of the test and passed. I recognize the interaction with text that's been mentioned. We do have samplers. This is not the first time that they experience this test. There is the responsibility certainly of the teacher in the school district to make sure that the student is comfortable and interacting with the text and the ability to do that on computer. Last year during conference committee, and then what was eventually passed and signed as House File 2, was a requirement that the state begin moving to, and we were directed to move to computer-based testing. And so we are doing that. And so we find sometimes bills such as this are a struggle for us to try and split that divide. So that's a challenge. The cost was mentioned, and that's just a couple brief comments. We do anticipate this bill in its current language will increase the cost sizably unless we limit it to certain administrations. Right now it says upon the election of the student. As we never know the end count that's participating, we have to be prepared for anybody and everybody to take it at any administration. Essentially what that means, and similar to my testimony earlier earlier in this committee, I don't recall what day. We will need to build additional forms and essentially build a new test. And let me explain why that's the case. When I say new test, it's the same form of it, but it's a paper version of administering this test. Right now, we spiral this test at the student level, and we can do that at computer. That means that if you took the test four times, we track exactly which form you took, and we give you A, and then the next time you show up on computer, we give you form B, and then we give you form C. To do this at a paper level, we can do that very easily because we know what student logged into what screen. To do that at a paper level, you can imagine, would be a logistical challenge both for the department and for the school district to be able to tell Johnny, this is your form B, no, wait, you need form C, etc. So what we would have to do essentially is we would have to develop a form that this is our paper form for this administration. We can't just take what's currently built and do that, because imagine again, here's form D that the student just took on computer, and we internally decide that form D will be everybody gets form D next month. That student is at an advantage, at an inappropriate advantage, because they just took that same form on computer last month. So we basically have to have a new set of forms that we can administer anytime a student comes into the paper. And this is, again, a requirement based on the standards for educational and psychological testing that we prohibit that. You may disagree with that we can just give the same form. My profession and my literature tells me otherwise. And then finally, we do anticipate that will create essentially a cost for our testing contractor, who of course will pass that on to us. Right now the paper-based test is done so that it is literally a human picking up the paper form, dropping, writing down the secure barcodes and putting it in the mail. When we do massive testing, as we do in the springtime with paper-based tests, there are huge line set up and huge warehouses to do that. We would essentially have to do something at least similar on some scale to do that at a paper test. So I think some of the language in here is certainly of concern to the department, especially at some of those cost issues that we were not designed to do at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dirks. Go ahead, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the concerns that Mr. Mattson has expressed to you. There is no doubt that high-stakes testing as a matter of accountability for student performance is expensive. It's very costly. It's costly to the state. It is costly to the school districts. There is no doubt about it. There's no doubt that the federal government has not followed through with their promise to support us in this high-stakes testing as we thought they were going to do almost 10 years ago with No Child Left Behind. And we, the state and local school districts, have been forced to foot the bill. The question is here in this committee, I think, is not about the cost. There will be questions to ask in other committees about the cost. I think the question here is, as a matter of policy, do we think it's important to make sure that these students' needs, as determined by themselves and their parents and local school officials, are being met in the best way possible? We can figure out ways to work on the cost. I've talked to Mr. Mattson on the phone before. We want to work out a solution that we think will be as responsible, cost-effective as possible. But education is a property right. And if we are going to have high-stakes testing as a matter of accountability, we better make sure that we are going the extra mile to ensure that these students have every opportunity based on the differing skill needs and the differing language abilities coming into these tests. We better make sure that they have every opportunity to pass these tests. Thank you.
Well, Okay, thank you, Representative Morgan. Before we go to members' questions, we have some housekeeping things that we need to take care of, so I am going to go ahead, now that we have a quorum, and call this meeting to order. And since there is a quorum, I would, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 23rd?
Madam, I so move.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Representative Benson moves approval of the minutes for February 23rd, 2010. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. And the minutes for February 23rd are approved. Okay, we are going to now go ahead and move Representative Morgan's bill. House File 2751 is now moved. The Chair moves House File 2751 and is recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance, with further recommendation to be referred to the K-12 Finance Division. So we have heard testimony on the bill. We're going to go ahead and go to members' questions. Representative Brainard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'll apologize, Representative Morgan, for missing your opening remarks, and you may have addressed this in your opening remarks, but recognizing that the financial piece may more appropriately belong in the K-12 finance, nevertheless, I have concern at a policy level about this phrase, at their election. I'm wondering if you visited with the department and have considered if there is a possible narrowing of the scope of that that would appropriately address your concerns and still having the opportunity for the paper and pencil test.
Representative Morgan?
Madam Chair, Representative Brainard, absolutely. And we're working on narrowing that language. We're working on some ideas. The department has made a suggestion. We're trying to work with them to narrow that scope. Clearly that language is on the unworkable side of things. So we're trying to narrow it down. Thank you.
All right. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And, Representative Morgan, I may be slow today. I notice I'm dropping my keys, and so it's one of those days. But I would like to ask you questions here about this that I don't quite understand. Could you just explain how large a problem this is or how many students are involved? I heard commentary that the problem has to do with students who do not read well. Other comments that it was the cost of the hardware or the computers or access to the computers or difficulty with the technology or the timing of the test. Is that the whole mix of the issue here? Which of those, and if it has to do with difficulty in reading the language, you know, we have a lot of discussion about whether students ought to be coached to the point where they are able to be competent, especially in reading, in order to move on to other education and so on. Rather than seat time, just have a whole series of questions.
Representative Morgan, would you like to answer those questions?
Madam Chair,
your testifier is.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I just want to be clear about the scope of this proposal. Wouldn't have anything to say about the overarching structure of trying to move towards computer testing. I think for most students, the computerized testing is a very effective method of getting this done efficiently and effectively. I think there's no doubt about that. But we do have some problems identified in schools in Burnsville, in St. Paul, and many other schools around the state. And I guess Mr. Mose perhaps can address more formally those particular issues related to this proposal.
Mr. Mose.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I believe at this point, as of the end of the most recent testing window, the February testing window, we still have approximately 600 seniors who have yet to pass the grad reading test, which is the one that we've been most concerned about because of the high stakes that are still attached to it. We believe that a number of these students are students who have individual education plans, and ultimately their teams will have to come together and decide whether or not there's a different level at which they're going to pass. But there's also a number of students who are English language learners who do not meet the four-year requirement that the Minnesota rule allows for them to be exempted from the high stakes on the test. And so these are students who are still learning the language and I'd say we've estimated in the neighborhood of 200 to 250 students who, at this point, we would, and we're pursuing options to see if we can come up with the funds to offer a paper pencil administration to them, because we just want to make sure that we've done everything that we can. They've taken the computer-based test a number of times, and we're seeing it pretty much stagnate at this point.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative McFarland, Representative Morgan has a comment.
I just wanted to add to that answer. I think the idea that maybe there's a very small number of students for whom this is appropriate and for whom this will be best is not an argument against doing it. I think it's actually an argument for doing it, because it reflects a reduced need for cost. But like the old story about the starfish being thrown back into sea, it's certainly important for that student. And I think that we need to make sure that every student who can benefit from this in a responsible, reasonable way, we should take action to help those students.
Well, Madam Chair, could I just have a quick...
Representative Benson, yes.
Just a quick... I think we heard as testimony that there was an issue over whether or not there was a differential between taking paper tests and the computer. Could you just respond to that as to whether there is a significant improvement?
Representative Morgan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Benson. Certainly, I respect the work that Mr. Mattson has done at the state and statistically analyzing all of these test results and so forth. But as he mentioned, these are done in the aggregate. And when you take a look at large numbers of groups, there are students, as we've seen throughout the discussions you have here in this committee and K-12 finance, students slip through the cracks. And we're trying to close up those cracks to keep students from slipping through and give them an opportunity to show what they know in a different way.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. First one would be for Representative Morgan. Why does this not include the math test? Is it just for the reading?
Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, as Mr. Moe has indicated, really the problem, and Mr. Moore said earlier, really the problem that people are identifying mostly is with the reading test, because on the reading test, it's the jumping back and forth from reading a selected material to the answer and trying to maintain that comprehension, particularly for people who struggle with learning, that really is the significant problem. So I think Mr. Morissette should come down here.
Yeah.
Come on down, Mr. Morissette. As Mr. Morissette's going to say, we have time constraints on the math issue as well. But this is really the big problem, the reading test, I think.
Mr. Morissette.
Math is not a requirement at this point in time. They have to take the test twice. It works better on the math is working okay on a test. When you were watching the students and they're reading a long story, and that story goes over several screens, and then they get to 5-6 questions that they have to answer, they have to go back through all of that screen and all of that information again. Yes, they can highlight. Yes, they can do some things. Yes, we encourage them to do other things with that. Reading right now is such that we haven't taught our students. They can do well with text messaging. But their comprehension isn't going to be all that great with that. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at more of really having to remember a story and then answer the questions and then going back and forth, they get lost. And it's not just our English language learners. The students I'm looking at that might even answer some of the questions, you know, are going to be our students who are going to struggle with reading, will be successful in life, but they're having a trouble getting through this test. And the continuation of the doing the same thing over and over again of a computer, when they walk into the room, they are dejected immediately. I do quick work to try to get them to really stay focused and do it. When you're giving them the opportunity to do it in a different format, you can see a little bit of a difference. Is there a huge impact on that paper pencil? You know, I would say at this point in time, I'll agree with my colleague here. No, but for some, it is. For some, they may not have passed that test if it hadn't been paper pencil. And I sit there and look at it and go, okay, it matters to that family. You know, I understand there's some cost with it. The students are pretty much getting, sorry, Dirk, but they're pretty getting to know the computerized test pretty much inside and out because they're taking it all the time. So they're understanding what they're reading. They're still having problems with answering those questions.
Mr. Dirks?
Madam.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dirk Manson, sorry.
Madam Chair, thank you. I've been called much worse, I can assure you. Just a couple of quick thoughts. You know, we just to keep in mind a perspective for committee members, we do allow this feature right now. We do allow a student to take it on paper. There is a policy in place that doesn't say you can do it immediately after, so that's kind of the difference here between the language of the bill and what the department has for policy, because we are trying to maintain some efficiencies within that. We are trusting that the comparability studies are appropriate, and yet again, recognizing for individual students. So I completely agree with Mr. Morissette in that account. Just a couple of quick comments. The comparability study is available. It's published online, so that information is there. And I would encourage members to go and take, they can download and look at this sample test online as well. It does allow for split screen, so you can read the passage up to the paragraph. To some degree, I guess I can make the argument it's easier than flipping back and forth the page because I can look at the paragraph and have the question right below. So students do have that access. And again, we have that sample opportunity for students to take. So I just wanted to make a couple of those clarifying comments, as well as Mr. Morissette has said, we have highlighting tools, notation tools, et cetera, that they can use. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McFarland.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the main question I had was the turnaround time to get the test results if you do it paper and pencil. I mean, the students in the schools would want to know that. What would be the difference?
Mr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, it's a scanned, it's a bubbled test. It's a multiple choice test, so it would be quicker, but obviously it's not going to be as quick as computer. It's going to take, first of all, we would have to determine, is this an entire, right now they have essentially about a week to take the computerized test. Paper forms typically need more security, so typically, as we do with our old BST language, we had it tested on one, or then a second day was makeup. It's locked down much tighter. Obviously, the district's got to unpack a box, and this is not, they know how to do this stuff, but it takes time. They've got to unpack a box, administer the test, box it back up, ship it to the distribution center. We have to look at the scanned results. So it would add, I think it's hard for me to guesstimate, but depending upon how it was structured, it would add probably a couple weeks to what we currently do, which is we return around those test results within the next week.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A quick question and then a comment. Mr. Mattson, do you have... We've heard, I think, words like enormously expensive. I mean, do we have a, can you give us the number of zeros here? Is this 100,000, 10 million, 100 million, a billion? What is enormously expensive?
Mr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, first of all, enormously expensive is anything beyond what I currently have budgeted. So anything to...
Touché.
Sir, I guess I would respectfully say that the committee should ask for fiscal note. We'd be glad to provide that. It depends upon the administration. If this were, we need to do this every month, similar, it has to mirror what we do on computer, I think you would be looking at seven digits. Maybe not high, sir, but seven digits.
Okay, Representative.
Madam Chair, can I just...
Oh, yes, please, Mr. Downey.
I'm going to vote no, and it just seems like this has got a lot of work to do. The author mentioned that the language might be unworkable as is, and we've got an unknown fiscal dimension in a year where everybody is just totally under fiscal pressures, and I would ask for a roll call.
Okay, will do. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need a quick clarification. Somebody mentioned that the cost is $45. Is that for the written test? And then is the electronic test no cost to the school at all?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Mattson.
And Representative, the cost we currently do have, and we kind of discussed this a little bit with, in fact, Burnsville was our pilot district to work out this original policy. The cost is $45. We asked our contractor, what is the cost? Obviously, it's more expensive to do this in onesies, twosies than it is to do it in that sense of, if we open up a line, the cost per test. The $45 is essentially outside of our contract. It's a cost paid to Pearson, our testing contractor, to do the manual barcoding production of the test, et cetera. So there is no cost for the computerized retest.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to remind members, based on Representative Downey's comment, that this is the policy committee,
and we vote on the policy. You don't vote no in this committee, generally speaking, on the cost. We take care of that when we do have the fiscal note in the Finance Committee. So while I'm taking my roll call vote, I'll be voting on the policy, and I think this is very good policy for students who we want. Our goal is to have students be successful, not trip them up.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. That's an excellent point. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and perhaps this is to Representative Morgan or perhaps to Dr. Mattson, we've talked a lot about, in other groups, we've talked a lot about administration styles here. And so can you go over again? So this is focused on language arts. And so I get, and perhaps Mr. Morris said this is for you. So I get this concept that what you're doing cognitively is you're having to look at large segments of information before you. I guess I don't know exactly how does the math get administered. Is it just straight problems that are laid out? What about situations where you've got word problems that are laid out? Wouldn't that same kind of issue arise in terms of being able to have time to look substantially at text to be able to go back and forth? And not that I'm looking to expand your bill, Representative Morgan, but it seems to me that that's an important issue.
Currently, right now, the reading is the biggest problem because it is all required on what the students read, comprehend, answer the questions. Yes, the math test is a very difficult test. It's done on the computer. It sets itself up a little bit better for that. The text is not as long to read on the math test as it is for the reading test. And what we're looking for is when we teach students who don't read well, we teach them kind of skills to compensate for that. And a lot of that is to be able to write, as many of you are doing here as we are talking and reading and writing and putting notes in there to be able to get back to that, to help them reference those types of data. What happens is they have to keep scanning through several screens to get where the information is. They can lose some of that data that's in there. They're not our strongest readers. You know, my question comes down to, are we trying to assess students' reading skills, or are we trying to assess how well they can read computer types of things? And the other day I had a lot of emails coming in. I had to organize a lot of that. I printed it off, so it was sitting in front of me, and I could check and work and move back. For me, it's just a flip of a screen, too, but, you know, with age and everything else, I don't work so well with that. The kids, on the other hand, are getting lost because they're not being able to comprehend what's going on. My hope is that we can move to the paper pencil version sooner. That's it. I appreciate the work that Dr. Mattson has done with us on this and allowing us to move forward for this. It has been it's given hope to some parents, even if the student didn't pass. It gave the parent, at least we tried everything possible. When the letters come home from me, and with Al Segrin's signature on it as well, that it said, "I'm sorry to say you did not pass. We will do it again." The kids are crying. Yeah. It's causing stress and anxiety when they come into the room. I'd like you all to come in. I had to buy cookies the last time with the group when I was going to have mass mutiny. They see the computer again, and it's like, I've already done this so many times. How many more times are you going to make me do this? I fail it. I can't do it. All I'm asking
Downey.
For is
an
extra
I'm
time.
I'm sorry, Mr. Thank
you. Sorry.
Representative Downey. Okay. Representative Swells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to speak about this process from a teaching point of view. And as many of you know, I teach AP English. And as we prepare our students for that exam, which is a written exam responding to literature, there are a lot of strategies that we teach our students as they're examining the piece. And we're talking about a segment of students that are opposite. They're the ones not passing the basic reading test. But there's a lot of skills that go into analyzing literature. One of the it's kind of a slang term when you teach how to do this, but we teach the students how to chunk their writing. And I know that sounds bizarre, but it's looking at organizational strategies that the writer who produced the piece may have created. So if they're looking how it was chunked, they can look at shifts in tone, they can look for organization, they can look for topic sentences, they can look for textual evidence that supports the topics. And they notate as they're reading so that it can help them quickly analyze what it is that they're reading, and then they're able to respond to the test question because they've done the work of analysis. That's what, as English teachers, we try to teach all of our students. It doesn't matter which rung they're at on the achievement scale. It is simply good pedagogical teaching strategies. I sometimes think that the computer has become a panacea. We are so addicted to test scores and achievement and moving our students forward, but I get so frustrated as a teacher when we get lost in that track and we forget what really truly makes critical thinkers out of our students. I'm just throwing that out there as a comment. I'm not going to commit one way or the other on the merits of the argument that's going on here. I'm just responding as a very frustrated English teacher, knowing what I teach my students in my classroom and trying to hold them accountable for the things that they are supposed to learn.
Okay, Mr. Matson, and then we will go to closing comments.
Madam Chair, just a quick clarification that students are able to make notations within the system. Thank you.
Representative Morgan, do you have any closing comments?
Very quickly, Madam Chair. I appreciate the concerns that Representative Downey has and that Dr. Matson has expressed to us about the current language and its alleged costs and proposed costs, and perhaps maybe it would cost this much. We don't know. We don't have a fiscal note yet. We are working on the language. I'm here because I've responded to a concern expressed to me by my school and the administrator of tests at my school, and I'm trying to address those concerns. I think they're real concerns. I think they're serious concerns, and I ask this policy committee to make a vote today on the policy, and I can assure you that we will take action to reduce and minimize any cost impacts of this as we move forward, as it gets to the Finance Committee.
Okay, with that, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good thing that we need to keep addressing. I think there were some concerns that were brought forward, and I think we as policymakers in this committee should have those rules figured out before they move on. And so I'd like to move that we table this.
Okay, there is a motion to table. All those in favor of tabling House File 2751, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The noes have it. It is not tabled. With that, I will. The chair renews her motion that House File 2751 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance, with further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. Roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Mariani?
Aye.
Kath?
Aye.
Abler? Benson?
Aye.
Reinhart?
Aye.
Dabney? Demmer?
No.
Dietrich?
Aye.
Depke?
Nay.
Downey?
No.
Faust?
Aye.
Greiling?
Aye.
Loon?
No.
McFarland?
No.
Murdoch?
No.
Newton?
Aye.
Nornes?
No.
Norton?
Aye.
Obermueller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Slawick?
Aye.
Swales?
Aye.
Abler? Dabney?
Thank you. With 13 in favor and 7
Not in favor. The bill does pass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members
you.
Of the committee.
Representative Kalin. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3043. Representative Kalin. If we thought the last one was complex, wait till...
Good morning, Madam Chair, and committee members.
Good morning. The Chair moves House File 3043 to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. Representative Kalin, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 3043 is in almost the exact shape that it left the House last year and survived through, I think, 99% of the hours of conference committee. And unfortunately, the Senate prevailed on an amendment near the end of conference. The bill is a bill to address the needs of our students and the needs of our teachers, parents, and administrators as we move forward as a state with the next round of state-developed tests, the MCA3s, that they be more responsive to the needs of the education community and provide feedback on a timely basis, as well as my hope is that we can craft state-developed tests that comply with federal mandates and federal requirements, but ultimately can provide the kind of data to districts that may be able to reduce the a layer of testing in our districts. As you know, we are spending a lot of time, as you just discussed, I believe at the end of that cycle in our lower grades, we're spending a lot of time with multiple tests, the MCA2s, the MCAs. The many districts, I believe that over two-thirds of our students in the state, it may actually be approaching three-quarters, are taking also the NWEAs, the Measures of Academic Progress. It's the 21st century, and you just had a discussion about the value of computer-taken tests. The value of computer-adaptive tests early on, as this committee and the K-12 Finance Committee has made a commitment to, through things like the response to intervention, these tests that provide data faster and can respond to the needs of the students and the abilities of the students by adapting are critical to early intervention. They're critical to early diagnosis. They're also critical to be able to provide that feedback on a macro level to teachers so that they can change the way that they're teaching and connect better with their students. And I was reminded of a story that a fourth grade teacher in North Branch told me when I first ran for office in 2004. Many of you know that I've pounded on this table and before asking for us to change the funding formula that has left a district like North Branch at the bottom of the total district funding from the state 6 of the last 7 years. Yet that district, so strapped for cash, has chosen to spend, I believe it's $35,000 on a separate contract at their own expense, as many of your districts have, for another test. And this fourth grade teacher who has 25 years of experience in the classroom said, 1 year, I saw the results come back within a week, rather than sitting on a shelf like the MCAs have and waiting a summer and not being able to respond. In one weekend, I saw that I needed to change the way that I was teaching reading, Representative Swales, that his kids weren't getting it. As I'm sure that you've had that experience, my mom, who's taught for a similar amount of time, has had that same experience. He tried a new approach on Monday morning and could see the light bulbs going off with the kids immediately. That's the value of these adaptive tests. Dr. Madsen is here. I think he can talk about what's happening today with the development of the MCA3s for the first round of assessments for next year. I want to point out to the committee that there is one language change, language addition on line 6.10. Unfortunately, Representative Norton had to step out, but one of the issues that she raised last year is this issue of language that we originally brought to this committee talked about going after trying to minimize the redundant testing, and that was the approach that we used in language coming to this committee. Many of you expressed the concern that you want to make sure that your districts, as I want to make sure mine, have the option if they believe that the state test is not fully meeting the needs of their students to continue to fund out of their own general fund the measures of academic progress contract. Line 6.10 represents what I think is the true intention of this bill, which is to maximize the opportunity as the state tests are being developed and implemented to have that test meet the needs of the district sufficient enough that they don't feel a need to spend their own money on testing when there are so many other demands for their funds, as you all know. I think I'll let Dr. Mattson, if it's all right, Madam Chair, provide some background on where they are and talk about some new implications, and I'd like to raise a policy question for this committee to ponder after we hear Dr. Mattson's overview.
Okay, Dr. Mattson. I went from Dirk to Mr. Mattson. Now I'm going to go to Dr. Mattson. New bill, new name.
Chair, Madam Chair, thank you. My mother has the same problem. She doesn't get it right most of the time. Again, Dirk Mattson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department. So MDE, the Department of Education, is certainly supportive of adaptive testing. We're very grateful for Representative Kalin's continued interest in adaptive testing. And we know that we worked on language, but bulk of that language that we worked with him on is now present from last session in this bill. So we appreciate that as a starting point. However, I guess I would just point out we are in a different place than we were last year due to some national efforts and also some work the department's done. So I just want to take a few brief moments, if I may, and I promise I'll try and be brief to talk about those. One of the things, too, to keep in mind as I begin those comments is that there is a different purpose in testing. You know, Representative Kalin made the comment about getting a test that fully meets the needs. There is no single test, and I've had this comment before, I think it was my Toyota comment, but there is no single test that fully can serve all the needs of what teachers are trying to do. It doesn't exist. It's a holy grail. There are formative needs of the kind of changes that Representative Kalin's teacher that he spoke with are able to make instantaneously, and there are summative needs. And summative needs serve a different purpose. You don't want the summative test necessarily to be an accountability test in some way. So you have to be careful about where those lines are set. That said, the department's certainly been working on trying to move toward, we are moving to adaptive testing. And we've been having those kinds of conversations, though, about where is that line. And as soon as you start putting any kind of stakes or collection or anything on formative tests, it changes the tenor of that, that teachers not necessarily as excited to necessarily try those changes. So just a couple of comments. And Representative Kalin asked me to speak about what the department has done so far. As I said, we are definitely supportive and are actively pursuing adaptive testing as soon as next year for the mathematics test in grades 3 through 8. Why reading is not moving as fast is because we are waiting to do that when the standards revise and when we have to change the test anyway according to the new standards when they're adopted. So many districts have been part of an established adaptive testing program for some time, and Representative Kalin mentioned that, and much of this bill is modeled after that methodology. There are a couple of concerns that we do have, again, according to the landscape that we're in right now this year. We are, as I mentioned, moving to a computer adaptive testing model as early as next year for mathematics, and again, I'm speaking only of 3 through 8 now, and English language arts are reading upon revision of the standards. We've done work internally to prepare for this transition over the past year, including a field test this past fall. We just completed with over 158 districts, 450 schools, and over 70,000 students participating in that field test for our adaptive testing. A concern that the department has is that the bill could put the department in a position where we have to redesign future elements because it is prescriptive about how the test is built. Future elements of the program, which essentially would be an unfunded mandate to MDE. We can't necessarily absorb those costs of shifting and changing at that point. A second point of 3 points. It is beneficial to the department to have a certain degree of flexibility, and certainly understand that it's this committee's purview to determine and guide legislative policy as far as the K-12 educational program. But there is, again, without sounding like the power needs to sit at my desk, there's some degree of flexibility that is beneficial to being able to design an adaptive test. Computer adaptive testing is a continually evolving field in educational measurement with multiple methodologies for test design and administration. For example, the department is looking at administering an off-grade level test as a formative element after the fixed adaptive test on grade level for NCLB is available. That's one option that doesn't necessarily fit the definitions very easily. But we don't know if we're going there yet. We're having conversations. Our national technical experts who advise us has also recommended investigate an interim assessment that's separate from the summative exam so as to allow for more focused formative assessment to supported by a separate item pool, providing increased diagnostic information because we have more items specific to that particular skill, and decreased security concerns. So essentially, all the votes are not in yet on the best way to build this assessment and to provide the maximum amount of information to students, teachers, and parents while taking a minimum amount of time to administer. So we do have some concerns that some of the definition restrictive language in this bill could chill the effects of designing the best possible adaptive tests. Again, the model that's described in the bill is one model of adaptive testing, but we may, as we continue to develop and work this test out and future tests, we may, as the field often does, find additional elements. One final note regarding to the procurement procedures in here. MDE has joined, the committee may or may not be aware, that there is an additional Race to the Top Assessment Consortium RFP or RFA that's going to come out from the federal government. Arne Duncan has set aside $350 million to bring states together to develop essentially consortium tests across a number of states. And so this is born out of Race to the Top and also the reauthorization of ESEA pending that we have joined a consortium. Let me back up. The benefits of the state joining that consortium are certainly obviously cost sharing, improving our assessments, the ability to compare student performance across states and across the nation because we've got a lot of extra muscle working toward that. So to some degree, to join that consortium and join into an RFP process or a procurement process, we're concerned the language in the bill would restrict our ability to participate in the consortium, particularly language giving preference to vendors. That process we have to follow as state statute, and getting all of the other 25 states that are currently in this consortium with us in adaptive building an adaptive test, we're concerned that we might not be able to be at the table because our language is more restrictive in that regard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mattson. Representative Kalin, you have one more testifier. Would you like to or not? Would you like to call on that testifier? Would you like to open it up for questions now?
We could have the other testifier come forward, and then I can...
Mr. Bartholomew?
Yes.
Okay, would you please come forward? We want to make sure that we have lots of time for questions. Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we'd like to encourage you not to adopt House File 3043. While we also appreciate Representative Kalin's intent to streamline the amount of testing that goes on between state tests and locally adopted tests, we'd ask that you keep the MCAs and allow their continued development, as Dr. Mattson has outlined, rather than potentially replacing an organic state standards-based assessment system with something that's imported, and for example, like the NWEAs. The state's MCAs, as I mentioned, and others, are built on Minnesota state standards, which were developed by Minnesota teachers, and Minnesota teachers are intricately involved with developing the MCAs. This practice is much more beneficial than trying to import a nationally norm reference test and then trying to take those test item pools and trying to match them up as best we can to our standards. Right now we have an organic system rather than trying to adapt somebody else's system. Second, because the MCAs are based on our standards, the test results and the student performance results that we get are reported based on our state standards, as opposed to performance relative to a national norm. And I could make more copies of these, but I was trying to save trees last night. but just to pass them out as examples. What I'm handing out is something that, as a parent in a school district that uses the NWEAs, as well as obviously the MCAs, what we get. On the inside, you'll see the letter that we received as a parent, talking about on the back side is the results of our student, of our daughter's performance on the NWEA or the MAP.
Right.
And that's basically what we get. And it shows our daughter's performance, both her own against the state, against the, pardon me, the district average, and then the national norm. There's no connection here relative to the state standards. The bar that they're shooting for is the national norm. By comparison, and I tried to find her version from last year, so I had to go to the department to get the sample, but this is what we get relative to her performance on the MCAs. And you'll see that you get the student, the school, the district, and the state. And the perform, and then on the inside, you get a decent explanation of what that performance represents versus the various strands of the MCAs and the state standards in reading and math. The MCAs now provide growth over a period of years, her growth relative to what it means to be performing at standards-based level. And then you get some more information on the back that gives you information on links for additional information. The bottom line is state testing, state standards. Minnesota's done an excellent job in setting the bar of where our students should be. We've done a much better job at that than many other states. And as a parent, I'd like to know how our daughter is doing relative to a higher set of expectations rather than a lower set of expectations as represented by a national norm. Both of the test results, the communication we get from our school district should be consistent. Right now we get one that's showing how she's doing versus a national norm, another report relative to the state standards. Ideally, parents should be hearing a unified message. And ideally, again, that message should be, how is a student doing relative to the state standards? That's what we're hoping to shoot for. So as a quick wrap-up, we'd encourage this committee and the legislature to stick with the MCAs and Minnesota standards-based approach rather than trying to bring in an outside entity and trying to patch that in. We think that the changes that you approved last year to the MCAs and that Dr. Mattson described, both moving online, trying to find an adaptive approach, are going to take a lot of the meet a lot of the needs that districts had looked at it with the NWEA. And we'd love to see the day sooner than later when the state's tests can replace local needs to find a separate test and pay that differently.
Okay, thank Representative you. Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, excuse me. A couple of responses to Mr. Bartholomew and then a broader policy question, I think. And then I also have an amendment I'd like to ask the committee to adopt to assuage some of these concerns. The state-developed test that we're talking about is developed from...
Senator Kalin, may I just interrupt you for one second?
Of course.
I just want to let you know that we have about 12 minutes for the bill.
Great.
And we want to make sure that members have plenty of time to ask questions. Okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's helpful. The MCA3s that Dr. Mattson's office is developing are developed directly out of our state standards. And that's the intent and, I believe, the language of this bill. So I want to, Mr. Bartholomew and I talked about that yesterday, and so I want to make that clear to this committee. On a broader policy question, and I actually think the rest of Mr. Bartholomew's testimony is actually testimony for the bill when you really listen to it. The broader question is this question of the race to the top multi-state consortium. As many of you know, Minnesota was a leader in the 90s in the early part of this decade in assessments. We were one of the first out of the gate. It really has helped drive student performance and leadership in teaching. I think the No Child Left Behind compliance efforts, while honorable and certainly an effort to protect our dollars coming to the state, have in some ways sacrificed a little bit of that leadership position. I think the question for this committee, I believe for the legislature, is what our role is in providing some principles to the department as they move forward with the consortium and the Race to the Top components. So the question is sort of how much do we want to help drive that conversation? How much do we want, again, to allow others to lead, other states and the nation, to drive Minnesota education policy? I think that's our job. And I very much appreciate Dr. Mattson's request for flexibility. That's why I hope that, Madam Chair, you might, or another member of the committee, might move to delete paragraph E on line 6, or on page 6, lines 13 to 17. I think those are the ones that are causing the gravest concern, and I think that we can work together to, should you pass this along to the Finance Committee, to find language that can clarify the goal of the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kalin. The chair moves to delete lines 6.13 to 6.17. Any questions on that amendment? Is that clear to everybody? On page 6. Okay, with that before me, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Representative Kalin, would you like to move to questions now?
Please do.
Okay, thank you. Representative Breinart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment may have addressed my first question to Dr. Mattson, but I was going to ask what specific language in the bill you saw as problematic in moving forward with the discussion through the Race to the Top application. But I also want to comment in relation to that. This issue raises some other broader positions this committee has raised with regard to the Race to the Top application, and that's the legislature's role in that process, particularly when it comes to the discussion of approach to common testing across 25 states. I, as a member of this policy committee, am very concerned that we, as legislators, will lose our voice in a process that's very critical to the entire direction our public educational system is taking. So I'm not necessarily averse to having language and statute that might require you to come back to us in the course of that discussion as this discussion with the 25 states move forward. So I guess what I'm saying is, well, I'm sympathetic to the need for us to move forward in that discussion at the national level. I also want to, put a few brakes on that process that require us to continue to have broad public discourse at the state level on these issues. So, and I welcome your comments on that, Dr. Mattson.
Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative Breinart, I don't disagree with anything you've said. I know as much about, well, maybe I know a little more about the Race to the Top Assessment Consortium as the general public, but it is still, the federal government has not necessarily put out any, they put out a preliminary, I'm sure it has some nice long federal name, document. The actual application process, there are still, I've compared this assessment consortium mini grant, if you will, of mini $350 million is mini, but it is to some degree in large scale testing across the entire nation, to a junior high dance where we're all walked into the cafeteria and are kind of standing around trying to eventually, do we want to pair with you, etc. We have consciously made the move to leave one of our dates at the dance. We had some verbal agreements to join one consortium that was not interested in doing adaptive testing, and we were fully committed to doing it. And so we have, and it would be my hope as March and April roll around, when those documents come out, I believe tentative timelines they've announced have been similar to around June or something when the applications are due. But again, it's a collective process, but certainly to be able to bring that conversation back to this body in whatever way they deem appropriate.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Mr. Bartholomew's testimony seemed to pretty specifically state that we were, by virtue of the language of this bill, kind of moving in a national direction, and Representative Kalin's seems to say the exact opposite, that what we're doing here is actually applied to the state standards. So I'll ask Dr. Mattson to referee. Are we really moving nationally with this bill? Is that a kind of an explicit move with this?
Dr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, I think, and sure, Representative Kalin would agree, this language is specific to state statute about how the state tests our bill. Our concern is that in having perhaps some prescriptive language in there, it may limit our ability to be at the table, at least to participate in conversations with other states about building this national test of a group of states. That test can't be built. So, as you know, and as has been said by Representative Caitlin, that these tests are aligned to our state standards. If the Common Core standards are ever finally released, and if Minnesota is an adopter of those common standards, then there is already, you know, preliminary agreement that certainly the national consortium efforts will be built aligned to those common standards. So there's a lot of ifs that have to happen before then. I think our concern is we just want to be able to be at the table during all those ifs and not basically have to get off the tram early, because there may be language in there that the consortium may be talking about that we already are restricted from doing. And again, sometimes those are abstracts and hypotheticals that I can't necessarily describe for you right now. But again, the evolution of how tests are designed is continually moving forward, and we're just have some weak concerns about the restrictive ability about that. Again, not about this committee's ability to or appropriateness to comment and direct the development of the assessment program, but just being able to have that flexibility to do so in those conversations. So I hope I've answered your question, sir.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, just a tiny little bit of background may be helpful, that I think we just deleted the last vestige of the original germ of my bill, which was hearing the value of the NWEAs and the measures of academic progress, however you your districts might refer to them, and the frustrations with the timing and the less useful data return, you know, because of the lag of the MCAs. That the language that we deleted on page 6 was an opportunity to see if there was a way for the state to develop a test in partnership with NWEA or another vendor that could do both tests. So having removed that, I think we have all of the original detritus gone from the bill. And I'll just point you to on page 1, line 11 and 12, that the tests, that the computer adaptive assessments are aligned with the state's required academic standards. And we're preserving that language because we want this to be a Minnesota test, not a national test dropped into Minnesota.
Thank you. I have one question for the author of the bill. Since this is the policy committee, and I really appreciate Representative Greiling pointing out that distinction, and then I hope when these bills go to K-12 finance, she will bring up that distinction again, that our questions and comments should be financial in nature. Mm-hmm. So in regards to that, are you going to have a fiscal note on this bill? Is there one?
Madam Chair, I don't recall whether we had a fiscal note last time. I think I'm happy to request one. I think it's important. The fiscal impacts of this bill are important to understand.
Exactly.
And both at the state level as well as I think we'll want to get some more, I don't know, we can't truly do a local impact note for this bill in the same formal way that you would do for a tax bill, but I think that we can ask our district and other allies and advocates that are in the room to perhaps put together some documents that could be helpful for that discussion.
Thank you, Representative Kalin. And I would appreciate that more of the local impact also, just to make sure that we have at least went down that path and we have the answers to those questions, because those are the questions I will be asking in finance. Okay, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify in favor of the bill? In favor of the bill. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak in opposition to the bill? Is there anybody in the audience who'd just like to speak to the bill? Go ahead, sir. I thought one of those, sir, would you please state your name for the tape?
Have a seat.
And just so that I don't appear rude, I just want to let you know that we are going to, we need to start another bill at in about a minute and a half, okay? So I hope you can limit your comments to a minute and a half.
Yes, Chair. My name is Rick Heller. I've been in communication with Department Mr. Mattson. I appreciate Mr. Mattson sending me that email recently regarding what the state's doing with all this assessment. I've been kind of tracking it. I try to understand it. As you know, it seems complex. And I know that we had a conversation. I'm currently creating that flow chart right now and shared among these individuals. Hopefully we can, next group that come through here also understand where we're at in this process. Last year I came and spoke about having a print disability. That falls under IDEA, but you won't find No Child Left Behind. This whole thing about this assessment piece, I understand it. The National Center of Educational Outcomes has a No Child Left Behind, or IRSA, and IDEA merge. And as we all know, we are to make these tests accessible. And as the state continues to move the rigor up, it's my understanding we don't have grade level specific content standards yet. And it's my understanding the value added is to help underpin that two-year adequate yearly progress to that. Mr. Mattson, correct me that if you like. And as we develop this, these kids that are taking these assessments in the classroom, one would be value-added Scantron achievement, perhaps the formative assessment by NWEA, the MAP, another formative assessment. And it seems to me that it's all being correlated together. And it looks like they're going to link Lexiles to these assessments, including the new one that's being generated for the upper 1% of 2% of special ed, which are not cognitively challenged, which it appears they're using Lexiles to analyze that, to change in perhaps the vocabulary but not the content, and shorten those sentences so those kids can access those tests. Again, another requirement that between IRSA and No Child Left Behind and IDEA, that when a kid can access those tests, and as the state moves up the rigors on the content for the CPs, we've yet to have those specific and content for mastery for each grade. That's how these standards are being developed. Any you want to say anything about what I said so far, Mr. Mattson?
Dr. Mattson, I was recognizing that look on your face. And it seems like this might be a little bit more of a complex matter. Is there something that you can answer in 30 seconds, or should we take this conversation outside the committee? Why don't you try 30 seconds, and then we'll continue the conversation after the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that's wise. There is a lot that's been mentioned here by Mr. Heller. Just briefly, the state tests are built to grade-specific standards that are written into Minnesota statute. They are used for adequate yearly progress, and we are having conversations about being able to provide additional reporting information for teachers and parents where the MCA reading has a Lexile score aligned to it as well, and teachers may be familiar with that Lexile score. There's a linking study going on, generally related to the computer adaptive conversation right now.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Heller.
One more time, Mr. Chair. The reason I came up in primary is about universal design. These tests are being adapted from the National Center of Education, the NCEO. They're the think tank to help make these universal design piece, make these, again, accessible. And I really would prefer that language somehow find its way into this year's session. As Mr. Newton has expressed before, concern these kids be able to access these tests in a meaningful way.
Thank you, Mr. Heller.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Kalin, any quick closing comments
just
or response to that universal design comment?
I think there's more conversation to be had on the issue. I think, as you started our conversation, it is a complex issue. I think we're working through probably about 90%, 95% of the issues, I hope, and we'll continue to work through them so that we can get consensus. My hope is to get consensus again this year. And the Senate is actually interested in the bill, and Senator Jen Olson is carrying the bill over there. So my hope is we can get this done this year.
Thank you. With that, the chair renews her motion that House File 3043 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Finance with a further recommendation to be referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kalin. Okay, we have Representative Kath. And he has guaranteed us that his bill is a 10-minute bill. And with your cooperation...
I never bring anything controversial, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Kath, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 3069, be recommended to pass. And I have two little oral amendments to throw in here, just some technical things to get it into the format that I would like to see.
Okay, why don't you just wait for members to get to... Everybody got your bill out, and then go ahead, Representative Kath.
On line 3.14... If you would just strike the first word and, so it should read I, K, M, and then after that comma add and N, because paragraph N was inadvertently left out. So it should read paragraphs I, comma, K, comma, M, comma, and N, and any other preparation requirements. And then on line 3.17, just change the effective date to June 30th of 2012.
Any clarification on those two oral amendments? Okay, with no comments, we have a motion. Representative Kath, would you make that motion?
Yep, I would move that oral amendment.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendments are adopted.
Last session, we had some language come forward that looked at relicensure applications, and part of that relicensure was a professional reflective statement by teachers, and reflected a lot of evidence-based reasoning in job-embedded staff development, and specifically how our teachers can use a lot of that professional growth within their own classrooms to move forward. And through the rulemaking, some of the questions that have been brought up, as well as a charge that I would like to make to the Board of Teaching, is to place this type of reflective practice within the other requirements for relicensure. So, for instance, in modifying curriculum, early onset mental illness, reading strategies, and behavioral interventions, if you are doing a reflective piece, it can then fulfill that requirement as part of your relicensure. And I'll just give you one example of it. I had an elementary teacher talk to me about that she was excited. She had purchased a book on love and logic, which is a behavioral intervention that a lot of elementary teachers do in their elementary classrooms. And through that process, she wanted to start enacting this in her room using some evidence-based practices, because it does have curriculum that goes along with it. She wanted to track the modifications within her classroom, but she noticed that this does not fulfill the requirement because it is not a separate CEU hour. So in an effort to try and recognize that and look at the evidence-based and the reflective practices that she was doing, I'm trying to make sure that we are giving all opportunities for these great activities in our classrooms that are actually part of best practices to move forward as part of their relicensure. And I can give you one other quick example of an educator who right now, just the school district purchased a smart board for their classroom and is now utilizing a bunch of resources to adapt all of his curriculum towards this level of technology, and would like to then use this reflection about how this technology has changed his classroom in order to use it towards his relicensure.
Thank you, Representative.
And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Kapp, anybody in the audience who would like to testify in favor of the bill? Okay. Ms. Ballmer, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Briefly, I appreciate the opportunity to work with Representative Kath on this. We do think that this is going to be reflect a strong change in our practice and in our policy to support exactly what Representative Kath has described in terms of best practice and ongoing professional development for teachers. And I want to be very clear that it is, in our view, will not at all neglect those four areas that are currently required by law, the reading, the mental health, the behavior interventions and adaptation of materials, but rather there will be some additional mechanisms allowable for how teachers can demonstrate that they are meeting those requirements. So we very much believe that those are important and will continue to be important, and we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience want to testify in opposition to the bill? Anybody in the audience just want to testify on the bill? Okay, Mr. Heller, welcome again. And this is, Mr. Heller, this is the disadvantage to being on, speaking to the last two bills. We are on a tight time limit, so I will give you about a minute.
My name is Rick Heller again. About best practice, I want to make sure that what that term means, because standardized test is my understanding. The experience I've had so far is standardized tests are not being utilized according to the manufacturer. They're breaking them apart. That's a concern I have because those things were standardized for specific reasons. I'll give you one quick example, and it has to do with the QRI. Quantitative inventory. It's built for fluency. They built the fluency off of it, and it was and it was just disturbing to think that for best practice you can do what you want. Just a comment. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We appreciate that. Any questions from members? Well, is this a first? Representative Kath, with your amendment, your bill cannot go to the general register. It needs to go because of rulemaking. So it can either go to GovOps or to K-12 Finance. Which would you prefer? Which door would you like?
I think I will take the K-12 Finance route.
Wise choice.
Okay. So we will want to change your motion to be re-referred to K-12 Finance.
And re-referred, yes.
Yes. Okay, since there are no further questions or comments, Representative Kath, would you like to renew your motion?
I renew my motion that House File 3069 be recommended to pass and referred to the K-12 Committee on Finance.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Mariani, thank you for the opportunity to chair this meeting this morning. And do you have any announcements that you would like to make for the committee?
Well, Madam Chair, I want to. Perhaps we should have you chair more often. We're done ahead of time, so you are obviously a much more efficient manager than the current chair of this committee. But thank you for chairing today. I greatly appreciate it.
We just have this great role model named Representative Greiling. <That's all. laughs> Okay, with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.